Okay, today is March 29th, and I'm calling the Hess committee meeting to order. It is 3 o'clock, and let the record show that Representative Faircloth is here, a Representative Gardner, Representative Seaton, Representative Roses, and myself, Wilson. And I do know that Representative Newman is testifying in finance right now, and he'll be down as soon as he gets done with that. So today we're going to have a presentation by the Office of Children's Services. And, well, actually, before I do that, I want to say that our secretary is Kelly, and our moderator is Steve, and my Hess aide is Becky. No last names today, just first names. We'll have a presentation by the Office of Children's Services, and Commissioner, I'm just going to let you do your thing today and explain why we're here and what we're doing. We're not going to hear any bills today at all. We are just going to have our presentation and explanations.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, I'm Carlene Jackson, the Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services, and with me is Tammy Sandoval, who heads our Office of Children's Services. And we are here today to talk to you about the Office of Children's Services and some of the interesting challenges and information that we have to move forward in making our system the best that it can possibly be. I want to start by saying that it's interesting for us all to remember that over a four-year period from 2001 to 2005, we had four agency directors in the Office of Children's Services, which is pretty amazing. And then 2 years ago, in March of 2005, Tammy came to us and took over leadership of OCS after working with OCS here in Alaska for a year and after more than 20-something years in child protection in other parts of the country. And I'm very grateful for that work. She's done a phenomenal job. And 6 months after that, I found myself in the role of Commissioner of Health and Social Services and looked at Tammy and said, gosh, here we are, and we're about to go through an administrative transition. What are we going to do with the lessons that we've learned and the information we know in terms of passing it on to the next folks that will be sitting in our chairs? And so what we decided that we really needed to do in order to make sure that the work that had been begun with the program improvement plan through the federal government and the citizen review panel and their reports was confirmed and able to be used in the future, we decided that we needed to bring in an outside consultant to do a review that we could pass on to the next folks. And so Tammy, being an expert in the field, looking around at the other experts in the field, identified an organization that had worked with all 50 states to provide technical assistance through the course of the Performance Improvement Plan, and she'll talk a little more about them. And we hired them to do this work. And so they came in, and in November of 2006, right at the point where the transition was beginning and we had an election, we had our report that was completed by our contractors. And so we began to talk with Department of Law about how do we hand this off and what do we do and can it just be given to the transition team. And of course, it was all very difficult to sort out for a while because they wanted to be sure, they being Department of Law, that we were protecting the confidentiality of folks that had participated in the report, because we'd had community stakeholders involved in giving their input, and of course to protect the children in the OCS system. So we went through December, and our new Attorney General came on, and the new Attorney General and I found out on the same day that we were going to be in the roles we're in. And so within a week I met with him and said, oh, I've got all these issues, and here's one of them. We want to be able to deal with these reports. And so he worked with his staff, and in January, after he came on board and we were able to sort things out, began to get the approvals for us to have these reports released. And then Tammy agreed to stay on with us as the head of Office of Children's Services, and so we looked at each other and went, well, here we are, and now we have these reports to inform our work as we move forward, and we want to be sure that we're doing that as the administration and the governor has given us the lead in a transparent and a truthful way. So we then began making plans to release the reports, and Tammy has met with different field offices across the state. Her management team has been involved. We've talked with the citizen review panel, who of course presented to this body about the findings in the reports, and then did a hearing yesterday in Senate Hess Committee and a press conference, and we're here to give you the full report today. So we're excited about it. We're also a little bit, there's kind of two feelings in this for me. One is there are no surprises in the report. There's not new information that we don't already know. The other is, just like a family that has not everything perfect going on in their family who begins to talk about it, there are kind of some feelings of, oh my gosh, now we're talking about these issues and they're out there. And on the one hand, that's really good because we can deal with them. On the other hand, it's painful because there are real people involved that are impacted by the things that are in the report. So we would ask you to be cognizant of that as we go forward. And I'll let Tammy walk us through the four different components of the report, and then we'll do a wrap-up at the end. And I would ask if you would indulge us that you write your questions down, because the four reports are quite interconnected, and it's possible that a question you have from one report may be answered in the next. And then if they're not, we'll be happy to answer questions at the end, if that's acceptable.
For the record, my name is Tammy Sandoval, and I head up the Office of Children's Services. I want to thank the Commissioner for her leadership and this committee for your time and commitment to these issues in the Office of Children's Services, and look forward to whatever suggestions and ideas you may have in order for us to continue to improve our system for Alaska's children and families. As the Commissioner said, there were a number of things going on in the Office of Children's Services that led us to this conclusion that it would be helpful to us to look at a number of other issues that weren't as pertinent or as focused on within that federal review in 2003 and the Citizen Review Panel. So we had the contractor look at four areas, and those areas were, first, the organizational structure of the Office of Children's Services, and that being the interface between the state office and the local office, and making sure that we were doing what we needed to from state office to support frontline workers in their work with families. Secondly, we asked the contractor to take a look at community relationships, and I'll tell you some about how that work was done as we get to that report. That's been an ongoing issue. It's the one that I think probably gets talked about the most, and so we wanted to take a special look at that in particular areas in the state, as well as also a statewide perspective. Third, we wanted to have the contractor take a look at our policies and those pertaining to the front end of the work we do, that being the report that gets made to our office and then either screened in or screened out for investigation, whether it meets the criteria, through the time of the case transfer, if we do an investigation and determine that kids are unsafe and that an ongoing service case needs to be opened. We asked them just to look at the front end. There are lots of reasons we had a particular interest in trying to look at the front end and making sure that we were focusing on child safety and that we were doing the right thing by our safety assessment model. And so while it would have been fantastic to look at the whole thing from start to finish, particular attention was paid to investigations. Time, money, focus on our efforts came into play. And lastly, we also asked the contractor to look at our training curriculum, that most specifically geared toward training and orientation of new employees, which we call TONE. I'm learning not to use the acronyms, but to spell it out. I did pretty good that time. So I want to just run through findings that were most, I think, pertinent to people who would be interested, as well as touched me in my leadership role. As you know, you have the contents of the entire reports, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have about them. First, with regard, going back to the beginning, the organizational review in the state office and local office interface, we really wanted to look at our effectiveness and efficiency within the Office of Children's Services. Employee morale is constantly an issue, job satisfaction, turnover, retention. Those willing to continue to do the hard jobs that they do was especially critical. So we had the contractor employ an online morale survey. Happy to report that 70% of OCS staff responded to the survey. It was for all of OCS and not just frontline workers. It's a fantastic response rate. The contractor also did focus groups with employees and individual interviews with employees both in the state office and in local offices. Some of the findings that were most pertinent to me and I think are really relevant to the issue of state and local office interface have to do with that 79% of those who responded to the survey said they do not feel included in agency decision making. 72% said that trust is lacking between staff and management. 71% said that there's a lack of openness and downward communication. 28% said that there's an organizational communication is good. 29% said that our training program is good to excellent. I always need to take a pause because I realize that I set the tone and that it's my responsibility to both lead and commit to improved communication within our office, and I'll tell you some of the things that I've done since then and what our plans, some of our plans are for the future to improve in that area. On the reverse though, I think these things are really fantastic and say a lot about our frontline staff. 73% responded that their job motivation is high. 70% said that they consistently receive support from their supervisor. 68% said that they are happy working at OCS. And 67% said that they are concerned about high performance as an employee of the Office of Children's Services. I think that gives us a fantastic foundation to build on, that our frontline staff who are most stressed, I think, and most overworked and most gets highlighted, that the fact that so many OCS staff are giving indication that job motivation is high and that they receive support and are happy is a foundation that we can build on. Some of the information that came from focus groups and individual interviews include that the author of the report noted that the participants were forthright, open, and honest. I think that's fantastic. That there's a solid understanding of our mission, that they feel a sense of mutual support within their offices, that they support our new safety assessment model, believe that it will really improve practice, but that they're concerned about how to do it all and the implementation of the model. They note problems that include communication, leadership, training, turnover, workload, policy design and distribution, and system support. They note that there's communication inconsistencies between the local, regional, and state offices, that decision-making regarding policy design and distribution and implementation are not transparent, that there are communication problems noted between investigations, ongoing, those permanency workers, and the licensing of foster homes, that in some offices that communication is problematic. That leadership is inconsistent within offices across the state and particularly when it comes to managing conflict. There's a perception that problem employees are not dealt with, that holding people accountable is ongoing and a pervasive problem at all levels, that training is inadequate, more workers are needed to meet workload demands, salaries should be higher, that there's a concern that supervisors require a social work degree, that ORCA, our management information system, that is our case management documentation computerized system, isn't moving along to make the changes that are happening both at the federal level, the state level, and the practice changes that we're putting into place. And that organizational climate varies, but many perceive our climate to be unfriendly and dysfunctional, and that too much clerical work is required of frontline staff. The contractor also gave us recommendations, and I want to note some of those and then conclude this section with talking about what we are doing so far. One of the recommendations that the contractor gives or states is that what works in Juneau may not work in Anchorage, may not work in Bethel, may not work in Kotzebue, which is, I'm just going to give a little editorial, which is a difficult thing for me as what I've heard in the 2 years I've been in this job is consistency, consistency, consistency. standardize the process, but yet from an outsider's point of view, that those are maybe there needs to be some differences. So going to have to work on that. Hard to figure out what all that means. And other recommendations include clarify responsibility, authority, and accountability of administration at local, regional, and state level, increase clerical support, start a support group for workers, continue to develop an exceptional training program, not just for new workers, but also seasoned and experienced workers, reduce workload, reassess the social work requirement for supervisors, have ORCA, our management information system, expert in every office, so there's someone to go to when we run into trouble, or workers do on the front line. Physically separate regional and field offices. Develop and lay out a communication strategy linked to the mission of our agency. Add services to children and families. Continue to expand our family-to-family program, which is a program that we have in Anchorage aimed at team decision-making involving families to come to the table and help make their own decisions for the safety of their children. And last but certainly not least is to continue to work on the issues of disproportionality, that being the overrepresentation of minority children in the child welfare system. I'm happy to say that this is one of the things that we've been working on continually, and this report says to me that it's not been enough and there needs to be more, is that beginning this year, when I had an inkling that I would be allowed to stay in the position and continue on in our efforts, we began an OCS newsletter. We had a contest. It was, I think, appropriately called the Pipeline. We wanted to get some good energy going to the issues in our state. And the caption is the flow of OCS. So we want to continue the annual staff morale survey. I think we got some really good baseline information, and we want to continue to have that annual survey so that we can continue to look at the trends and whether we're improving or not, and in what areas. We're going to continue our safety assessment process. I think that there's been a lot of support within these reports that says that we're on the right track with that. The governor's budget, as you know, includes 6 new frontline positions, that we are working on always our retention and recruitment plan, emphasis on retention first, recruitment second. We need to retain our workers on the front line. We can't lose the experience. We can't lose that passion that frontline workers have and start over with new staff. We're doing that on a pretty constant rotating basis, and so we need more emphasis on retention. We're well on our way to a non-licensure requirement for supervisors, which has been somewhat controversial, but we know that we're losing staff on the that have many years of Child Protective Services experience that can't promote into a supervisor position because they don't have a social work degree, and there's not enough of a career ladder in the Office of Children's Services, and we lose them. And so we've asked the Department of Administration to approve relaxing that requirement and having related fields be able to apply as well and be considered for employment. And I won't give a date because I keep giving a date, but very soon we should have that. We've been embarking on both myself and other regional managers on judicial and community meetings whereby we're talking about our new safety assessment model and opening it up to questions and answers so that folks can talk to us about their concerns or how they may be able to help. And last, but certainly not least, we're always looking for ways to increase efforts to prevent child abuse and neglect through our prevention programs and federal grants.
And while you're taking a breath there, I will, for the record, show that Representative Newman has joined us, and Representative Cisna joined us quite some time ago. Thank you. Go ahead.
Sure. Next, I want to give an overview of the community relations work and the report. The way that work was done is we asked the contractor to do focus groups of community stakeholders. We chose the MATSU office, the Anchorage office, and the Juneau field offices, as well as state office And then to get a more statewide perspective, we asked the contractor, they offered, suggested, and we thought it was a fantastic idea, to talk with 12 what they termed key informant interviews. And those are folks that have a statewide perspective who are the heads or the agency leads of folks that we deal with most commonly around the state, troopers, citizen review panel, guardian ad litems, those folks that we work with every day. We asked them to specifically give us information about the impressions community professionals hold of us, impressions of how effective we are in carrying out our child protection responsibilities, and simply our relationships between OCS and those community agencies. What we found was that generally professionals value and respect our work, that they tend to be more positive, have more positive views than those held of the general public, that managers at the regional and state level are viewed in a highly positive manner. Line staff are not viewed in quite as positive a manner as those of managerial and administrators. That there's still a concern that line staff are slow to return calls, or in some cases not at all. However, even the harshest of critics express their appreciation for the work that is done by workers and supervisors who have these difficult jobs of child protective services. They noted that OCS is somewhat to highly effective in investigating reports of child maltreatment, that safety assessment is viewed as a step in the right direction, that wide variation exists in the quality of work, the ability to form working relationships with their community partners, and that how well we communicate with other professionals and our willingness to share information with those professionals vary widely from worker to worker and office to office. That several key informants expressed concern about the MATSU office and its reputation for being difficult to work with. General perception was that agencies in Wasilla are not working together very well. Communication between the Office of Children's Services and community agencies was identified as one of the top areas where disagreements or conflict are likely to occur. I saw all throughout these reports communication. There's a note that we have better relationships with tribes, but a perception that significant issues still remain, that there needs to continue to be more coordination with tribes on investigations, and that there's also still information from our community stakeholders that being able to place children in need of placement into tribally licensed foster homes would benefit the system greatly. Recommendations that they give regarding these findings is, of course, to retain the good staff we have in direct service provisions, to have sufficient resources to achieve manageable workloads, to improve our responsiveness, return our calls, work with our community stakeholders, to continue to improve our public image and to educate the public on our work. And here's where I get to make a plug that I think in the past year to 2 years we've been doing a better job of that, because we've had the good fortune to have public information officers that work for the commissioner to work on our behalf in OCS, and they're in the audience and I want them to know how much we appreciate them. I also want to note, because it was just this week, although it's been a very long week, is that there were two positive letters to the editor by citizens who talked about the work that we're doing. It's not something I've seen a lot of in my tenure in Alaska, as short as it may be. And I just want to note that and thank those who may be listening, that those are greatly appreciated. The further recommendations, I got sidetracked just for a second. Further recommendations are that we need to support and encourage local offices to conduct community outreach activities, to develop a system to gather feedback from those key organizations, including families, foster parents, and professionals that we work with. Supervisors are the key to ensuring good practice, and we need to continue to develop their skills and enhance their abilities to do that. Cultural sensitivity training, it needs to continue to be highlighted. that we need to develop clear expectations and guidelines on the sharing of information on cases. And local and regional offices need to work in a more open and transparent manner. This is an area that has been something that I've really tried to focus on in the past 2 years, that being our community relationships. And I want to note a few things. But in the noting of these few things, I want to also acknowledge that I realize that there's only been some success and that we're going to have to consider how we're going to continue to improve community relationships. In October of 2005, I issued a memo, a program instruction we call it, that I gave very clear guidelines about returning phone calls and returning emails and giving instances about and giving time frames and in what circumstances and what to do when you're not going to be in the office. And still, you know, a year and a half later, we hear that that's still a concern and an issue. The other thing that we have done is our quality assurance unit has done annual surveys with families, tribal organizations, foster parents, service providers, and the judicial community. And we've posted them online. They've been on our website. So one of the recommendations that's given is to get feedback, and we've been doing that, and yet there's a gap. So we realize there's a disconnect there. Either the surveys aren't effective, aren't enough, or we're not doing enough education about that information exists. In February of 2006, under the commissioner's leadership, she issued policies and procedures specific to our department to share information between divisions. So often the divisions within the Department of Health and Social Services work with the same families in different areas. And so it seemed clear to many of us, and certainly the vision of the commissioner, that we be able to do that freely, and that when needed, that we are able to share information. And so we all signed a confidentiality agreement with the parameters of what can be shared, and are encouraged to do so, to work with our sister and brother divisions. In the fall of 2006, in response to the citizen review panel, we developed frequently asked questions regarding confidentiality. We did that work with the Department of Law. We distributed it and trained all staff on those frequently asked questions and those guidelines and parameters that got changed and made law in House Bill 53 with Representative Coghill's leadership, and continued to get tweaked last year in House Bill 408. And we posted those frequently asked questions to our website so that community stakeholders could also view what the questions were, so that everybody was working from the same page, although you see from the results of the study that's still an issue about inconsistency in what's confidential in one area from another. So again, although we've made an effort, clearly still an issue. In September of 2006, I issued a memo to my staff as a continuation and a process with regard to our work with tribal partners on disproportionality, a memo to include and invite tribal partners to go out in investigations when the tribal affiliation is known, so that we could do that work together. We've worked extensively with the Department of Law on the notion of being able to place in tribally licensed foster homes, and we've only had a limited success with that. There's issues bigger than me with regard to tribally licensed foster homes, although I will say that we're encouraged to look at these issues again in this current administration. We're holding, as I said, we're holding holding community meetings regarding our new safety assessment model. So those are some of the things that we're continuing to do, and will take any and all suggestions about how we continue to improve our image and those relationships with our community stakeholders. Next, I want to highlight policy. And again, time, money, effort. We asked the contractor to take a look at the front end because we really wanted to look at whether policies and procedures support practice and decision making on the part of our staff. They looked, as I said, through screening, through the case transfer. We asked them to evaluate the substance and content, to evaluate our guidance and direction, to evaluate the clarity of the intervention approach, and to evaluate the form in writing. And I would have to say that this is one of the areas that I learned some things, and I'll point them out as I'm going along. They said that they realized, although they hadn't looked at the entire policy and procedure, that the policies and procedures that they did review, there was no reference to the belief and the values of and the mission of our organization, the objective of the intervention, or our desired results. They explained in the report that that's critical to everybody working from the same page and having the same foundation for why we do what we do and how we do it. They noted some issues with the quality of writing, that they said that some of the policies are written in ways that likely contribute to confusion or misunderstanding, and that there's a need for more precision. This is one of the most profound things. I've said this for 2 weeks. This is now the 10th time, because it's really profound to me, and I'll tell you why. There's an assumption that the reader will know what is not stated. That really hits home for me, because someone who's been in the profession for as long as I have realizes that when a policy comes to me, that I'm a part of making an assumption. I don't read it that way. I don't read it as a new worker might need to read it. I don't read it as a community stakeholder needs to read it and interpret why we make the decisions we do. And so I realized when I went through this that not only some of these other issues that are more precise and we can explain, an assumption that the reader will know what isn't stated, and we give our policies and procedures to new workers and expect for them to have it be a guide for why they're doing what they're doing. And so I feel like we've let frontline workers down in that respect, and I want to take responsibility for how we improve that in the future. They give us more examples. There's a good number of examples. They recognize that there's a serious challenge in writing child welfare policy at a level that's easy to read and understand. And I've gotten better at explaining the acronyms and saying them out loud before I use the short version, but that's not true in our field. We do it all the time. And I realize that in trying to make sense of this report in particular, that the federal government continues to put down new policies and regulations and things we must do, that as good as House Bill 53 was at helping us to be clearer about who we serve, why we serve them, and the good best practice work that we need to be doing, and then the subsequent bill last year, that's a lot of new rules that have to be put into policy and procedure. And I believe, I wish it were just a theory, but I'm recalling that we got in the business of trying to get these policies and procedures out, and I'm afraid that we lost some of the meaning and the intention that will really help those who don't already know what it means, and it hasn't been helpful to staff. And so I'm taking all that way. I assume that's what it means. They talk about the organization of policy, that there needs to be a more organized approach. They give reference to that some policy refers reader to the reader by citing other policy. I dare say that human nature probably isn't one that we're going to continue to page through until we find the answer to the question that we looked at the first policy for. I know that's true for me when I fill out forms and when I look at pages and pages and pages of things. That our policies reinforce minimum effort rather than best practice. That policy issues about practice or decision making in some instances are given limited attention. That guidance and direction is ineffective when several policy issues are collapsed into one policy. That, and there's occasionally policy that contains a non-policy requirement. Some provisions were identified that seemed more like suggestions rather than a policy. That policy fails to clearly establish what constitutes compliance with a policy. sometimes there were unqualified exceptions to a policy. We opened the door a little bit, but we didn't lay out exactly how to go through the door. And last but not least is policy is out of date. Recommendations, as you know already, if you've read the Anchorage Daily News, is that they suggest that we write new policy and not revise the old. Just have to take another breath there. That we have to establish a method for reviewing policy drafts to assure they meet the criteria and effectively provide direction, regulation, and support for our OCS intervention. That we have to clearly spell out our philosophical base from which we operate and who we seek to serve. This is an area that I've been asked a lot about what my plan is. And what I'll say is, I took to heart this notion in the organizational report that workers don't feel like they're a part of agency decision making, and that policy making and distribution is fuzzy, unclear. And so I haven't moved too far forward in my thinking, although I have to tell you it's hard for me because I want to. I'm a problem solver by nature. I haven't moved too far forward in my thinking because what I realize is it's going to take lots of minds to figure out a process for how you begin a new policy and procedure manual if that's the recommendation you choose to take. And I'll be looking to my boss for some help on that. And I think that what we've heard and know is that we have to get community buy-in. We've also got to involve our community stakeholders. And to try to think about how to do that I'm all ears. Lastly, I just want to touch on the last report with regard to our training and orientation for new employees. And we time and money, effort, again, we had them look at that because one of the things, as I noted early on, was we're concerned about the retention of our staff. And one of the things we hear from staff is training is ineffective. You heard it all throughout, both in the organizational study and focus groups, that training isn't getting workers where they need to be. And so the feedback we got from the consultant was that our training on information collection is far too general. It's not specific enough, doesn't lay out a specific practice guideline that's necessary for effective intervention. That our curriculum doesn't explicitly qualify what specific information is important to gather in order to make a good safety assessment of children. That although we begin the curriculum and we state it is a value of the Office of Children's Services to be a family-centered organization and that we value family, we value families in conjunction with protecting children, we move through the curriculum and there gets to be an emphasis placed on the legalistic issues and guidelines and mandates of a child in need of aid petition, and we lose some of that how to be a family-centered, a more holistic worker when you also have this judicial system in place that helps you with that. So we need to bring those closer in alignment, I think. They give us feedback about that there's an unclear or imprecise use of definitions, inconsistent, and blending of essential practice concepts. There's further confusion to the differences between maltreatment, risk, and the safety of children. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about that. That's one of the things that we're working really hard on with regard to our safety assessment, so I can give you the short version if you're interested. But being clear about what is abuse and neglect, what's risk to children, and what makes children unsafe is a critical practice concept. When the curriculum was developed, the investigation focused on risk and maltreatment. And despite the Adoption and Safe Families Act of 1997, that we haven't moved, we are in the process of moving to a safety assessment model, but that the curriculum still talks about risk, and that's what, until this new safety assessment model, was about how workers made their decisions. I know that didn't come out quite as clear as it was in my head. Basically, in a nutshell, you know, it was a little cold when we got here, but not so much.
The hot seat.
Yeah. That the curriculum still really talks about the risk of children and how to make case decisions based on risk, and that it's working on, and we're getting there to incorporate the safety assessment model. But in the review at this time of the curriculum, that hadn't yet been apparent to the reviewer. Their recommendations are to employ the Adoption and Safe Families Act, that being safety, permanency, and well-being, as the foundation for the training. It's what the feds measure us on. It's what we get asked to do. It's how we conduct our quality assurance reviews when that team of workers goes out to do case reviews on a monthly basis. And I read that and I thought, well, how simple is that? I mean, that's how simple it could be. It could bring everything into alignment with why we do what we do and how we do it. That the OCS mission should be apparent in the curriculum, define who we aim to serve, structured in a more linear format, that helping workers to see how the case management flow goes from the time a report is made through the conclusion of the case in whatever way, shape, or form that happens, and that much more time needs to be spent on safety planning. I'm happy to say that this is also an area that we began work on before I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg, but last year we recognized and heard from staff that our new worker training wasn't sufficient. And so we got a group of OCS staff at all levels around the state, along with tribal partners, to do a tone review and revision. And one of the things that the great things that's happened by involving our tribal partners and stakeholders is that cultural competency and our issues regarding disproportionality aren't just one session. They're moving to it being throughout all of the training, that it be incorporated into each of the components of training and not just one thing that gets taught on an afternoon and then asked workers to apply it all throughout other places in their work. And so we're pleased with the progress that the TONE advisory group is making in conjunction with the University of Alaska Anchorage, who does our training academy and training of new workers. We think we've made some progress in that area, and I can only assume and commit that this report and some of the examples that are given in the detail will continue to help us move through that process as we work to make a new worker training that really helps new workers to understand their role.
Thank you, Representative Roses.
Thank you. I have a real appreciation for how difficult it is to bring this forward, especially when some of the fingers that are pointing inward. And so I appreciate the way in which you've delivered the information. It is a pretty comprehensive report. I've read through most of it. I do have some questions on some of it and some comments. I've been involved in a number of situations where we've had to go in and do, you know, personnel studies, and for me in particular, it's been in schools, and the way in which the models are designed. And one of the prevailing things that we found out in all the areas that we worked, and I want to, there is a question in this, so I'm just trying to preface it. Was it's very often easy to identify that people are not feeling comfortable with the communication model at all levels? Always feel like they're not part of the decision-making process, feel like they're not getting enough help and enough support, and we find that all through all the schools. But then when you ask, how do we solve the problem, they'll go, I don't know. And part of it is because of the time span. You're asked to do more and more with less and less, and so the question boils down to, well, do I go to a training class and get 2 days behind on my work, or do I stay here and only be 1 day behind in my work? And so it's that trade-off of the pressure of the job as opposed to trying to do something else. So I guess my question in that would be, How do you structure your time allotment in order to do these trainings, and do you have a system built in for continuing education in the field in which they're in?
Representative Roses, through the chair, you've hit on a really essential element of some of the issues within the Office of Children's Services. We do have training classes that go beyond that new worker training that the university provides, and that's what I most commonly hear workers say when you go back and say, but there's this training or that training. Get yourself to the academy, sign yourself up for next month's training, and that's exactly how they feel, is we can't spare the time. And so we, one of the things I've been saying, and just to say that I've been on this whirlwind tour of as many local offices that I could hit, either telephonically or in person, in the past week and a half before these reports became public, because as I said, I took to heart the issue of a lack of openness and downward communication, and decided that it was important for as many of the OCF staff to see me delivering the message rather than to read it in the paper this morning. And so we've been talking about burnout, workload. Those are huge, huge issues, and it's what folks want to talk most about. And what I've been saying, which is far too simplistic and doesn't answer the question, but is true in my mind, that if our staff doesn't take the break to get away from what is a very intense, complicated, difficult job, to get themselves refreshed and educated and continue to get that mentorship, they quit. And then they're no good to us. And this turnover rate that we have, it's just a revolving door, because people are burning out so fast because they can't keep up with the work. And so for me, while I know I'm still going to have to deal with work not being done and people being concerned about that, it's far more important for me to continue to keep, educate, and retain workers who have a commitment to this work. That was a really long answer. I don't have a great answer, but it's something that's key.
If I may.
Follow-up, Representative Roses.
In part of that process, and the reason that I asked that question was to get to this next one. As the employees that you have working for you, are they all part of a collective bargaining unit?
Representative Roses, through the chair, yes.
And in particular, the one that I'm getting to is the concern that many of the employees had that not everybody's pulling their weight, that some have to be dogged and prodded and pushed to get their work done. And so I guess the reason that I asked this question was, has there been any kind of coordination between you and the bargaining units to set up some type of an employee evaluation system by which these things can be addressed and brought to a surface rather than the appearance that they're being swept under the rug?
Through the chair, Representative Roses, we work with the union on an employee-by-employee basis. The state has a personnel system that we work with in conjunction with the union on particular personnel matters. It was enlightening to me to hear from staff themselves that there are still problem employees that they feel like aren't being dealt with, because there's a number of employees that I know in the past 2 years that have been dealt with and have been dismissed, and so to see it still be an issue and be from a coworker is enlightening to me.
And if I may, the reason that I ask about the evaluation system is because I know that when you deal with collective bargaining units, there's a process that you go through, and there are more often than not challenges to anybody that is terminated. And so with absent some type of a formalized evaluation process, whether it be included in that as self-assessment as well as supervisory assessment as well as those that are receiving the services from which this employee provides, getting an assessment from that area as well. Absent that, I don't know how you go about being able to accurately do that without saying, well, we just know. And so, you know, the self-assessment part of that is often a major piece of it. So that might be something you may want to take a look at, and I think you'll find it to be helpful, and there's some good models out there. But the other part to it is very often when you lack that kind of an evaluation system to where people get an opportunity to vent as to what the issues and concerns are, both within and outside of their own framework, that you get people saying, you know, I'm working my tail off and I'm getting the same amount of pay the other guy is, and I only get jumped on when I don't do something and never hear about the good things that I do. This is an opportunity to recognize it, and there are systems in which those things get highlighted. And more often than not, that's where the burnout starts, is when they get tired of being blamed and not rewarded, whether it just be the pat on the back or a thank you, as you said with the, I mean, I was sitting on this side and saw your face light up when you talked about the editor. That's the same thing the employees get when they get it from their supervisor. So just.
Thank you for your comments.
Most of us have seen this, I think, but in case you hadn't, here's the article that was in the paper. Representative Newman has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions, but I see the boss there, Ms. Jackson's ready with pen and paper in hand, so I'll just ask them and to try and be save as much time as we can. And I think I'll probably add a few comments in here, too. You know, Tammy, we've discussed this after the Kelly case, very notable case. That family wasn't more than a couple miles as the crow flies from where I live. We talked about a lot of those problems then and what you were going to be doing. We're still talking about them. You told me about a lot of the changes that you had in place to make sure that would never happen again. They're still happening. What changes? First question. You had a plan then that you were going to go down. How is that plan different than the plan that you have today? And I may seem a little bit disgruntled here, and that's because I'm the person who sits on this committee who's from the MATSU. My staff, I'm very fortunate to have somebody on my staff who worked in OCS to help the people in my district. In the MATSU Valley, we get calls from all around the valley to try and help them through the process. Things don't seem to have changed a lot. It's a couple of weeks before we get responses back. Very slow. Do you plan any types of changes in management and things like that in the MATSU, or on how you plan on doing things? And a little back to the Kelly case, is that if I remember right, the Kelly case was handled by the Anchorage office. And I'm wondering if that was because you had some mistrust in your MATSU office to even handle that case. It's rated as a 2-1 being the worst. And so, you know, I'm not quite sure why. And don't get me wrong, I realize that this is probably one of the worst jobs you could ever have. As somebody who worked on the sexual abuse, mandatory sentencing for sexual abuse victims bill, I saw and was is exposed to some stuff that I had never saw in my life that you have to deal with every day, and it tore my heart out, quite frankly. But you're the people who have the job to take care of that. Mm-hmm. That's your job. Mm-hmm. We've got a report here that's not very good. And I don't need to go into a lot of it. A lot of it talks about, you know, it's unfriendly, dysfunctional. That's something that, again, my office has been told by other agencies in the MATSU quite often. Quite often. And it's a continuing thing. And it's interesting that we're talking about this now because ethics has been such an important issue to this body this year. And this is truly an ethics situation within itself. OCS on how they deal with the people that they have to deal with every day. So I think that it's good that we're talking about this and give it a very thorough review, recommendations. And I know that I probably speak for a lot of the legislators here because our staff has to deal with the public every day on these issues. Might I suggest that you maybe talk to some of our staff of what situations that they have, what problems they may have with some of the local agencies. What is there something that's cyclic there? Is there something that keeps reoccurring there that might help you in what you're doing there, because we have all have some pretty competent staff who deal with this every day in their lives too, and they probably could spread some help there. We talk about
follow-up for Representative
Nunes. I'll just leave it at that, and you can go from on there, Tammy, and hopefully you'll come back and talk to me in my office again, and we can go over some of these issues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, if I could address a few of the sort of broad-based topics that are in your questions, Representative Newman. I think, number one, these are issues that are bigger in many cases than just the Office of Children's Services or even just our department, and I think that Representative Rose has touched on some of those. So there's going to be, it's going to take longer for us to tease out some of the pieces rather than the others. Another important thing to keep in mind is that there has been a culture of confidentiality, and rightly so, around protecting children. But part of why we chose to have this done and we chose to bring this forward is because we don't want that confidentiality to shield the things that really need to be dealt with that are within that organization. And a lot of good work has gone on, and you make a good point that the frontline workers and the social workers and Tammy have some of the hardest jobs in our entire state government. But nonetheless, we have to deal with where the problems are. And for all the good we've done in making small improvements, we're now at a place where the improvements we need to make are system changes. When our policies are not clear to our workers, when our training doesn't empower them to do those judgment calls about where you spend your time and how you're able to make a call back, at my level, there's a serious responsibility to be working as hard as those frontline workers. And so our bringing this forward is to elicit your questions and to be able to deal with those things. And we know we're not going to succeed 100% in even the next 4 years, but this is more than a budget exercise. This is a plan for how we move forward in the next 4 years. And so we appreciate your questions and concerns. We ascribe to Representative Rose's policy of trust but verify. We're saying, here's this report. Here's the good, the bad, and the ugly. We're committed to making changes, and we expect you're going to hold us accountable for where they are.
Quick follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Sandoval or Ms. Jackson, again, two of my questions were, what different changes do we have now in this plan as compared to your plan that you had to deal with these issues 2 years ago? And do you plan changes in the MATSU office?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I want to be clear that we have maintained the plan, and that is to improve practice on the front line. We've done that through our model of safety assessment. There's a number of program instructions and policies that I've put out with an expectation that my staff be more accountable, be more responsive, and when I read that it hasn't happened, it means that I have to take another look at the way I've communicated that or my expectations and be accountable to dealing with the problem employees that aren't following that continue to be a part of how we have the feedback we have from these reports. It's not true for everyone. There are several, many, the majority of OCS staff do what they need to do in order to meet the needs despite the many complicated tasks that they're asked to do. With regard to, so I'm maintaining the plan, but I think that we're gonna have to add another chapter to that plan, and that is the follow-up and the accountability and the responsibility piece at my level and down. With regard to the MATSU office in particular, it's a harder one for me to answer because state personnel rules prevent me from being very specific about what the intended plan will be in the MATSU, but I can assure you that there's a number of ideas, tasks, procedures that the Commissioner's office and I have been talking about and will follow up on as soon as we get through this blitz of these reports being shared with the public.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You know what, one thing I thought of too, and it kind of piggybacks onto what Representative Rose said, the Commissioner of Education would probably be able to help you quite a bit in this. And the reason is because he has to deal with, you know, superintendents have to evaluate principals. Principals have to evaluate teachers. And you have to have good data. You can't have somebody that's just going to, just to be nice, going to say all nice things because there's no reason to do it that way. You have to improve. And then when you have a program and when you tell this person, this is what the problem is, you are bound to help them get better.
Right.
You know, and so then you have to figure out a program for them so that, you know, maybe send them to a special training or help them become better. And then once they become, you know, if then the next year you go back and you say, okay, this is what we set up for you, and you're still not doing it. But then you have a record of how you tried to help that person and how you expected that person to perform, and if they didn't, then it's all laid out and it's much easier for you. But I mean, there's a whole procedure to do that, and it's very important that whoever does the evaluations, that they are very honest, and many people, that's hard to do, and so it's just easier for them to say nice things so that they don't have to say anything. But no one wins that way. No one wins. And so I think that that's very important, and Representative Rose.
Sure, I would like to follow up on that a little bit. I don't want it to go on the record or anybody thinking that I was saying that in order to fire somebody, you got to have the documentation. All I was saying was that is helpful in the event that where you're working. But I don't believe in that process. I believe in identifying a problem, giving people an opportunity to correct the behavior or correct the problem, and give them assistance in being able to do that. It's not enough to say you're not doing it right, do it over. Show them how to do it right, give them the training necessary to do it right, give them the training to be effective, and then give them a support mechanism to work with them to make sure it gets there. So built into this system, if they're new at the job, it's an external assessment. Once they get farther in the job, it becomes an internal assessment. You have some very clear markings as to what we're looking for, and so people, because more often than not, if people have an opportunity to do some self-reflection on where they are, they're sometimes the harshest critics. And then not only assess where you are, but what would you like to see in terms of a support mechanism to get you to the level where you think you're accomplishing your job and you're feeling supported? Because people rarely leave their jobs because they're happy with it. And so there's a tools by which we can help to get to that point. And so maybe, and following along in that, I think part of what's causing me a little bit of discomfort here is because when we sat on the Health and Social Services Finance Subcommittee and we took a look at the budget and we talked about staffing and we talked about positions and we talked about budgeting to go along with that, I realized that in each department you have given directions and this is where we need to be, and you're carrying forward the recommendations that are out there. Whether you necessarily support all of it or don't support all of it, that's where we're at and that's what we're moving forward on. But when I saw the number of positions that were being eliminated in various departments because they were vacant for 15 months, we weren't able to fill them, so there's no use leaving them on the budget. I think there's some areas we maybe want to look at some increasing staff, and that might be in internal quality assurance officers or mentors that can go from place to place to place and address those areas of improvement. Part of that assessment, you, for lack of a better term, because I'm an educator, put somebody on a plan of improvement. That doesn't mean we're throwing you out the door. This means we're identifying those specific areas of concern and we're setting up a model with you as to how to address that concern for growth. And so that's the kind of thing I'm looking at, and hopefully that somewhere within your budget, if you have vacant positions, you can maybe direct some of those towards that area if they haven't been filled. And at some point in time, if you don't have it, that when the supplemental budget comes out, you'll ask for it, because I can assure you, if those are the areas you're moving in, I'll do everything I can to champion your cause.
Through the chair, Representative Roses, I appreciate that, and that the positions that were eliminated were positions that we were not able to use right in the way that they were, so you're exactly right. And also to get back to Representative Newman's question, part of the issue is what we do with staffing and positions that we have, and part of it is other resources that we may need external to the state, like what we did with this review, to help us figure out in particular areas where we don't have the homegrown knowledge or base of experience, or because we're too myopic, because we're too close to the situation to be able to identify what a particular office or a particular area needs. So those are the kind of things that we're building a strategy now based on this information to move forward with. So there will be changes. And what they are today, we can't tell you because we still have to get that plan.
Thank you. Representative Sisson and then Representative Gardner.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Madam Chair. I have actually kind of two areas of questions, but sort of to start with, history. History is one of those really important things because so much of history keeps working. We're still involved in the history. We're part of the history that when I got involved with what was then, what was DFYS, same problems. And what I saw as a foster parent at that particular time, which was in the mid-80s, was the triangulation between the social workers, the foster parent, and the natural parents. Every one of them was bad. Everybody was, there wasn't a good guy to be found. I mean, there just wasn't any. And so what we're talking about really is a chronic illness. And what we know with chronic illnesses is that they're the devil to get fixed. You've got things that are entrenched. You've got behaviors that are entrenched. And this has been going on as long as your oldest worker, you've got, or the person that's been there the longest, you've got habits that have developed and systems that have been put in place to keep things familiar. And that's the problem. We tend to love our dysfunctional behaviors. We protect them. And you're going to have to deal with that if you're really going to change it. We don't like to change. None of us do. We fight those changes. And you're going to be part of the problem. And that's all of us get into that position. Now, in terms of my questions, because it's no good if we don't offer some kind of suggestion. One of them would be bringing people back. You can't, one, you've got to retain people, but two, you almost need to find people who had a lot of objections to what was going on and maybe hit it on the nail in some cases and might be people who would bring back some of what you need, because new people are not really the answer because it'll take so long to get them caught up. And, you know, and that's one of the problems of bringing in new positions is that fresh out of college, because that's who you get, are people who are young, haven't been real experienced in parenting and all of the dramas that go on, and they don't know what the department's like and what needs to be changed. And it wouldn't be a bad idea to go out there and if nothing else, just do some review with people, what they thought, what they think would have helped. Good exit interviews are really a good thing, and try to bring back some of the talent. And when you described a lot of what you were talking about, and of course, first starting with good, is the fact that your folks get the mission. They get it. They've got it in their bones. They want to see the department do that. They want the division do it. They really want to be there. That's great. And you're right, Tammy. That you're right on. That's an enormous talent. And they believe in it, but there isn't the structure that allows them to see how that translates to their position. And that's actually, and I did go to, in San Diego right after the federal review, I did go to one of those workshops where different states were talking about what they had done. Lots of states are dealing with exactly the same problems that we are, and lots of them have made the technology work so that actually the mission gets transferred to the measurements and actually then gets transferred to the performance of the worker, and that can actually be seen in the software that allows you to see what a region is doing over here on some of the measures. And this is all something that would have to be worked out. But it is, it's not like we have to invent it all over. So that tie between missions and the measures and the workers is absolutely crucial on this one. And I don't know that you want to respond to that, because I do have another comment. Do you wish to respond to that one in terms of what you might be thinking about?
Through the chair, Representative Cisna, you're right on. I think there are many policy and procedures, for example, out there that can take what we've done here and then work with us on our mission, measures, and values and be able to incorporate that so we can do the rewrite. I think that's part of why the contractor said rewrite, don't try to edit, because you need to get that embedded in there. So absolutely.
So if I may continue, thank you. And this is really rough, and I'm really glad that you're being as open and as responsible about this. That's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to maintain. The next biggest thing I think that's a big problem is the change in the public perception. And speaking of chronic, the public perception is that it's a problem that will never be solved, that it hurts people, and you've got contra customers out there. You've got and I went through some training at one point working with customer relations, and customers who have had bad experiences have, and it's sort of like funerals have try to have about 200, I think it is, seats. For somebody who's moderately well known, and that's because our sphere of influence is about 200, and so if you've got one person who's had a bad experience, they had a foster child, they had their child taken away without good reason, that person has 200 people that they've told that story to, and it may not be 200, it may only be 10, but if it's a good story, it's going to go out there. And so public perception has to change. You've got people working against you, and you've got to get people working for you. And there is one, and this is the big question, one group that actually has been working for you, and they talk to us. And I'm wondering if they're here now, if they're online, and what your plan is to bring them in, because they can, as volunteers, do a lot of road work for you, bringing in a lot of community and faith-based, for instance, and that is the citizen review panel. Those folks have been out there looking at this, and you need to capture them and then clone them to do the job. So if you could speak to that, and that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Sisman, you're exactly right, and that's part of why we met with the citizen review panel when they were in town. And part of what's happened, they were created in about 2002, I believe, and there were not necessarily clear boundaries with the creation of that panel around what their role was with the department. And for a time, I think it's fair to say, a bit of an adversarial relationship between a lot of the staff and the panel members, because again, I believe our workers in the field have felt they've had to do this work all by themselves. And so there hasn't been a culture of collaboration and of seeing other people, whether they're non-social workers working in the agency, the citizen review panel, the police officer in the community, whomever, as part of the team that's helping keep children safe and families strong. I think that in our last meeting with the citizen review panel, and Tammy can speak to this as well, we really came to a new place of being able to partner in new ways. And I just so appreciate their willingness to hang in there with us through the process, because they are volunteers and they could have given up and said, you know, we're tight, this, we're out of here, you need to just do away with the whole office and start over. And they have not done that, and so I completely concur, and I'll let Tammy add her comments.
Representative Cisna, through the chair, that day I think was, I know this is a word that gets used so often these days, but I do think it was a tipping point. They came in to our office, grateful again to Representative Coghill, who helped facilitate the meeting, because I think that they were wanting to come in, and I'm still not sure what they wanted to say, and I'm grateful for that. But we had the meeting before they came to present to this committee, and I spent about 3 hours with them. I went through, they were the first group that I debriefed. And, you know, I asked for them to keep most of it under wraps, because I really did want a chance to brief my staff, as many of them as I could. And they agreed to that, but I think that that was part of what you saw that day, was this change in what they planned to say. And from that, we made an agreement that we would continue. We had, but in a more meaningful way, find new ways to partner with one another, to work side by side. And what that turned into as recent go as last week is one of the CRP members, Susie Hoyer, went with me to Bethel, and we did a staff meeting together. I debriefed my staff, and she was present for the debriefing. And you might assume that not all staff has taken to this information and feels the same way that we do about it, in terms of it being more of the systems reform information that we need. And I would say that they were forthright, honest, and upfront about some of their struggles. And I think it was good for not only myself, but for the citizen review panel member that was there, for us to go through that together. And we intend on doing more of that. And I think I actually haven't heard from her, I'm sure she'd be happy to give her own opinion. But for me, it was one of those experiences that I felt like that we had crossed a bridge, and that we were in a new place. And so I'm enthused about our partnership with the Citizen Review Panel.
Follow up.
One tiny little extra thing that I've heard it said, and I really believe it, and that is we so often will take out something that isn't working and put something new in, and we've retained our commissioner, and we've retained our division director, and that is an enormous strength, because we're able to build instead of tearing it down and then having to start all over again. And I do think that there's some real hope because of that. Thank you.
Yeah, I really feel that too, and I realize that the two of you have inherited a lot of things, you know. But I'm really rather proud of you, because anytime you commission someone to go out and do this, you're gonna. If that's saying you're willing to face up the music and do what you can to change, and so I know that this has been not easy, but I'm just, you know, I can tell just by the way you're responding and everything that you're very serious upon this, and that you want to make as many changes you can, and you'd go 100 miles an hour if you could. We can't do that right now, so I just want you to know that, because you know, the fact that you commissioned this to begin with means that you knew there were problems and you weren't sure how to handle them, and this is a good way to do it. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. The previous questions have been sort of big picture, and I'm drilling down a little bit to more specific kind of things. Right at the beginning of your presentation, you talked about that ORCA is not moving along in terms of being able to make the changes that are necessary, and that's a new system, and it's a pretty expensive system, and my understanding was it was supposed to be able to reduce paperwork and make a broad exchange of information available so that people could find what they needed when they needed it, and it would all be. So tell me what's happening with that.
Madam Chair, Representative Gardner, there's a number of things that are happening with ORCA and our management information system. What I referred to is it was developed mm-hmm. from a model that was already somebody else's state. We changed the things that we felt like long ago now, but that needed to be changed in terms of making it Alaskan. And from that comes constant changes, federal changes, state law changes, new mandates, good mandates, but new mandates that you have to go in and change the templates, change the rules, change the fields, change things about it. And all of that just takes programmer time and information technology. I'm such a social worker when it comes to this, but information technology time and the demands on the system. One of the things that we've stressed about, and I know the legislature has been graciously patient and maybe at times not so patient, rightly so, with the amount of information that comes in the form of a report that talks about our outcomes. Those are all the things that those folks who are employed on the ORCA project have to balance. And I find myself at times giving up things that I know would help me or help you because I'm trying to, they call it level of effort, give the level of effort time to things that will help the frontline worker. I've questioned that at times in the work that happens behind the scenes to make ORCA be the system it will be, because it will be. I'm still convinced of that because I came from a system almost exactly the same, and it did what we needed it to do and what we all wanted it to do. We're just not there yet. It is a new system, and in the grand scheme, what I learn when I make it out and talk with other directors, that in the grand scheme, we still did it cheaper than many other states did it, and we do it with less resources than many other states have to devote to the project, and that our it not moving as fast as we wanted to is not so different than other states as well. That's not comforting to me. It's not comforting to frontline staff. It's likely not comforting to you. But what I learn is that Alaska's not different in that way.
Okay. And in follow-up, it used to be said that computerizing stuff would save on paperwork, mm-hmm. and I think that it's generally understood now that it does not at all save on paperwork. It just makes more information available in different ways. Would you agree with that? Has the impact, you mentioned that the frontline workers just have too much paperwork. Is this helpful? Do you think it will be in the long run?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, my frontline staff would absolutely agree that it has not helped their job. I wish that I could tell you it did. But having just been through this tour, it's one of the things that comes up. When I debrief that particular subject, what they'll say is, it hasn't saved us time. Now, I believe that it will. I still believe it. And only because I've had a previous experience with the same management information system. It's just a small child welfare world out there, but the state that I came from, it's a long story, but I'm familiar with our system. In a way, because it's the same system that I used to work in, and we will get there. It's not performing at the level we need it to, and we have different issues in Alaska that have to do with bandwidth and connectivity and information bouncing off of satellites. And there's just different issues here that we have to continue to work through until we get there.
Okay, thank you. And I have another question that's not related. I think of your field as having three parts, and the front end is making the decision about how to either keep a child safely home or how to remove that child, when, at what point to remove it. And then there's kind of the broad middle, what do you do while the child is in custody and what services are available and visits and case plans and all of that. And then there's the permanency part, and all of it sort of builds to permanency. Can you talk to me about, are we achieving permanency more quickly? Are we achieving better outcomes? I mean, what's happening here over time right now?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, we are improving. As you may remember, I hope that this has been publicized. I know it has. We did pass our federal performance improvement plan, which mandated that we make improvements in those areas. We have improved. We are returning more quickly. We are returning or moving to permanency more quickly. We're doing the things that we need to do, but we're not there yet. We're not at the federal standard level. Mm-hmm. We're not at a level that we would most like for our children and families of Alaska to have from our system. But yes, we are moving in that direction.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Newman, I've got Representative Faircloth. Did you have on that point?
Yeah, well, just kind of a quick thing here. Thank you, Madam Chair, by the way. You know, we're talking about money and funding and all this and how important it is. I'll just say that I'll do everything that I can, you know, when I think about fixing roads or the other things that we fund, the safety of our kids has got to be a priority. And I cannot tell you how important that is to me. I passed a note on to the committee chair that anything that I can do to help, if she'd like to do a subcommittee, anything like that, I'd be proud to try and do what I can to help on that. As a member from the Mat-Su, where we've got some problems there, whatever I can do to help, you know, just, but whatever we fund, we fund roads, we fund lots of things in the state, but we have kids out there being abused every day in an apartment that's in dire need of help. Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay.
Representative Faircloth.
Thank you. First, I'd just like to align myself with those who've said that we do appreciate the transparency and the honesty in bringing forward and looking at ourselves and looking at ways that we need to change and do things better. And so I'll just bring up some points. I need to depart right at 4:30, so I only have a couple minutes. So I'm going to sort of throw it out, and if you want to have discussions with me later about it, I just would like it in the record. I'd like to learn more a little bit about your safety assessment model and how that's changed so that frontline workers can make those determinations. I wanted to talk to you about hiring your contractor. And when you went through that research and they told you that they had worked in 50 other states, if you got any information or feedback with them on the turnover rates in those states in similar to working conditions. We all bring different expertise to the table. Representative Rose has worked in education for years, and my most recent experience is in crisis intervention for the last 4 years. And I'll tell you that I had a high turnover rate in frontline workers, and so I'm wondering if that's consistent throughout the nation for the industry. I found it very interesting in looking at the organizational review and your morale study that almost, I believe it was over 50% or real close to our workers are 2 years, they've only been employed for 2 years, which is sort of consistent with my history in working with crisis intervention, that I'm not sure that people can hold up in the position any longer than that and retain their spirituality and their relationships outside of the work environment. And so that said, I hear you inkling on the prevention line, and I heard Representative Rose's and I believe Representative Wilson talk a little bit about prevention. And I'm wondering, again, drawing from my previous experience and seeing what made people happy in the social environment, I had educators that were there for 10 years, and I had frontline workers that were there for two at best. And so I'm wondering, because we want to look, as Representative Newman said, at keeping our children safe, people that are working want to feel happy. Your workers are happy with the work they do, but they don't get the opportunity to see positive, healthy family relationships or see that maybe some front-end immediate gratification that someone put a smile on their face. If they're having to deal with issues, taking people out of the home and having teachers upset with them because you've disrupted a classroom because the teacher wasn't sure if they were supposed to call law enforcement or OCS, and OCS is sort of getting this bad rap. So, wrapping our arms around the whole situation of high workload, turnover, and public perception, I'm wondering if the position should be modified to include a certain percentage that was community outreach, and so that each person that's in the office carried that workload, but part of their workload had some immediate gratification in that they were trying to make societal change, that they were trying to say, OCS is the good guy. This is the criteria we do, and do some community and public speaking, be able to go into a classroom and talk about, you know, how healthy that you want those families, and give that staff, that frontline person, an opportunity to shine, report back. I don't know if it can help with the communication, but you see what I'm saying? Sort of, if we only have them do crisis intervention, I don't know that no matter what we do, no matter what we pay them, that they will stay longer than 2 years, because having working in 4 years and only having to respond a few times a year, that response is devastating to a human spirit. And they've got to, at least from my experience, see something positive in what they do. They need to see a difference, and they can make that difference, and they are in the crisis intervention, but they can't get their head further enough out of the sand to see that they're making the difference, and I think that may promote some turnover. So the comparison by state would be helpful on turnover. And then looking at that comparison, that's where I would go to look at least at the baseline policy decisions that were developed inside of those states. If the person we paid for our study has some of that information, we'd be able to access it less expensively. And then I really appreciated Representative Rose's talking about a union partnership. And I didn't see resistance from you, but I worked for a union further back in my career for a couple years, and it is a labor group that wants their employees, from my perspective, to be the best that they can be. They don't want slackers. They don't want people that are in trouble all the time. It causes them additional workload, too. And so if we could find a way to partner with that group in looking at morale and self-evaluation.
And training.
And training. It would help the unions keep their people accountable, too. And this is quickly, I don't need it today, but in the Mat-Su office, I'm wondering how many are having to commute in for an hour or two to get there, and how many workers actually reside in a close proximity to that. And then Representative Newman and myself are very concerned with the truancy issue. Children who are not going to school, and maybe that's how we do the community outreach of more of a positive impact for our staff that are working frontline. If they helped us respond to the truancy issue, I don't know if it's giving the child a ride to work, calling them up, making sure they have an alarm clock, making sure they have oatmeal, whatever it is. Maybe that's something positive, and that would heal their spirit in a way. And I think that's it. Just if we could find a way to give them, our employees, an opportunity to be successful, and that they see the success instead of just the crisis all the time, that that we might help continue that happy staff that we have.
So. Thank you. Representative Fairclough, I think those were some great comments, really.
That's crisis intervention. Yeah. I'm sorry. It makes me teary to even talk about, to know what they go through.
Representative Gardner, yeah. Then Representative
Thank
Rose.
You. On that same point, it's always intrigued me that OPA has such wonderful retention. The guardians ad litem who work at OPA, many of them work with exactly these same families, same population, same kind of work. And granted, they often come in after the immediate crisis, and they don't do the work with families where kids are not removed, or not often. But I wonder what's kind of different, because that is one of the happiest state offices I have ever known, and the longevity there is 10, 15 years. It's really hard to get a job there because nobody ever leaves. So there's a lot of good things going on there for people who do very similar work, I mean, certainly with the same population.
Representative Roses.
Thank you. We had this conversation privately after one of the finance subcommittee meetings, but I want to put this on the record and can add that to the notes that you have there. But one of the areas that I made a recommendation in that you maybe take a look at for some temporary assistance in dealing with some of the caseloads that you have is some of the Title I schools in Anchorage have homeschool coordinators. And they really are social workers. Their job is to go out and outreach into the community, to work with the parents, to try to build better relationship with the kids, to try to provide services for the kids. If they need clothes, if they need food, they're the ones that make contact with the agencies and hook them up with the parents to make sure that the services are provided, and they do a yeoman's task. But many of those are funded through Title I programs, and so unfortunately we don't have them in every school, and if we did have, it would be a phenomenal success, but it's a very expensive program. Most of them are strictly working during the school year, and many of them are always looking for opportunities in the summer to continue it. Very few of the Title I schools have summer school, and so the ones that are there are always battling for that one or two positions. And so I can assure you, if you expanded this out, you would have every one of these people looking for an opportunity to continue to do the work they do on a daily basis. And if it didn't do anything else, but freed up some of your workers that you have so that they can get a break and so that they can have some training and have a little bit of a sabbatical, I think this would go a long way in terms of improving the morale. The other piece that I think that would be helpful in this is if you set up some type of a job rotation process, because some of your frontline workers have moved on to other positions where they're maybe doing more paperwork and less contact work. And if you set it up so that it's on a rotating basis, so that every 2 years or so, everybody gets a year break. And so you just take that entire pool and continue to rotate them in and out so that you don't have that burnout. And then you will have that experience in the background that can offer that mentoring and the support for those that are still there. So, I mean, there's some other models that I've seen that work that I'd be happy to discuss with you. But I think there's some good potential. And the first step is what you've done, and that's identify the problem and then work towards fixing it. So, again, you know, want to compliment you on moving forward and recognize it. And it's not easy.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a tough report, and I just wanted to say that I'm really glad that the governor kept you guys on so that we don't have exactly what we've had in the past is new administration comes in, terrible things in family services, and we blame it on the past guys and don't solve the problem. So I think the committee's had some excellent suggestions for you, and I think all of us individually will, if we can add things or if there's questions, come to us. But I appreciate you staying around with this report and rewriting, because that's, I totally agree that that's what needs to be done to get away and get back down to the fundamentals so that everybody understands what the true goal of each one of those things that they're doing is. And I wish you luck, and I'm glad that you two are here with the experience and also with the shoulders that have to carry the burden of what's here. And we'll sure help you all we can.
And I'm looking at the community buy-in is not going to be easy either. That's going to be a really difficult. I don't know how you even think of where to start, but I would think that surely there's some other states that have the very same, very very same mission in Office of Children's Services that we would want, and so I would think that you don't have to start at ground zero, that you can, you know, find, maybe ask the ones that you commissioned to begin with, ask them, where do you think is the best, you know, go to those people and say, hey, we need help. And most areas, I think, would be willing to help, and at least that would give you a little bit of a start. I don't know, but I hope that you can find some of the suggestions here useful. And if you need somebody, and you know, if we need a subcommittee to help with you on when you do this, let me know. We'll be glad to help out. What we want to make this state a better state in any way we can. And you got your hands full, and I don't think there would be anything wrong with asking for some help. So Representative, just
along that line, in terms of the public buy-in and the public perception, anytime you're in a division in a situation where the majority of your work involves disaster cleanup, just make no mistake, that's what it is, or crisis situations, it's always difficult to have, you know, good positive results, because there's always somebody that's disenfranchised as a result. Their kid's gone, or this is not right, or something. There's always a criticism to be there, because things aren't always the way they want it to be. You have a law you have to follow. It has to be, not what you want it to be. But I will tell you that when you can get to the point to where when you get those early notifications that there may be a problem here, and you can turn your agency into a proactive agency as opposed to a reactive agency, the PR piece will take care of itself. It'll take care of itself. We saw it in every one of these schools that had homeschool coordinators. They went from being the scourge of the community to the grangers that schools used to be, Everybody goes to the community, they go to those schools. That's the first point of contact, not the last. Mm-hmm. It will work.
Any other comments? Thank you so much. Go ahead if you'd like to sum up.
If I could just thank the committee so much for your suggestions. I think this would be one of the tapes we'll be listening to many times because we can't possibly follow all of our notes. And I really do believe that even the public out there wants the same thing you want and the same thing we want and the same thing the Citizen Review Panel wants and our workers wants, and that's safe children. And I think because everybody's so passionate about it, sometimes we get stuck. But I really do believe that this is the beginning of a process where we can make that happen. And I thank you all for helping us with that.
Thank you so much. And I wish this was Friday so you could go home and just veg. I will adjourn this meeting.